So good morning. I think we can start now. We are at the very last part for myself. This is microRNA, and I just before starting the lesson, I want to ask you, the people, please, people who are doing the reports. Can they please? I wait. Can they please make a short file, like a PDF, for each session, just showing the names of the people talking that day, okay, with the titles of the presentation? Can you take care of that? For example, tomorrow we will have six people. Just saying, okay, Friday, April 29 or 28, whatever, there will be these talks by students, blah, blah, blah. So I have a kind of small PDF, okay? Thank you. It's your charge, okay? Thank you. Good, so we start with this microRNA lesson, and microRNA, of course, We saw already the very general story last time we met, and this slide has just the purpose to repeat this MIR base, that is probably the primary database for microRNA, and you can take a look here, just to know the statistics. I mean, to see how many microRNA are there, which kind of characters they have, and so on. So, as a textbook for this part, I choose this review that is on the site, of course, and this is from David Bartle, that is probably the main researcher in the field, and he works at the Howard Hughes Medical Institute and Whitehead Institute of in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And this has been published only 1 month ago, so it's extremely recent review. So it's ideal textbook for you, and it's really complete. I mean, whatever you can know about microRNA is there, so please take care. Okay. So just the first figure, we saw it already on Monday. This is the general scheme of how microRNA works, and just going through again, you remember that this the this metazoan microRNA genes, which encode a specific, a particular form of RNA that is called a pri microRNA, and is transcribed by polymerase II, so the same which transcribes protein coding genes, and as a consequence, these RNA are kept. Okay, they are kept in the 5' prime as normal transcript from this polymerase, and they have this feature, the special feature, that they have a hairpin loop structure here that is almost something like 30 nucleotides long. Okay, so the complementary part is more or less 30 nucleotides long, and this question, is the 3' prime end polyadenylated? Actually, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Why it is not? Just because the processing, this processing here, cuts the RNA, and sometimes it cuts the RNA before it's terminated. So you don't have polyadenylation, okay? Have you got? Okay. So this is processed by this microprocessor, which is formed by DROSHA, the processing enzyme, and two complementary proteins that are DGCR8, and this makes a cut here, leaving two nucleotides overhang, okay? And leaving the 5' phosphorylated, as usually the endonucleases do, okay? And the 3' in OH form. So this is called the pre-miRNA, hairpin, okay, and this is transported, you remember, by exporting 5 to the cytoplasm. And in the cytoplasm, you have the normal pathway of RNA interference working, okay, you remember, last time we discussed it. So whenever you have a double RNA helix in the cell, there will be this enzyme, dicer enzyme, which takes care of this double-stranded RNA and cuts it in short fragments. I say in short because they are on average 22 nucleotides long, okay? They can be 20, they can be 24, but actually average 22. And as you can see, after the cut of dicer, the microRNA duplex is kind of symmetrical because it has both 5' prime ends phosphorylated, okay, and both 3' prime ends in OH form. So now this duplex is loaded onto the AGO protein that actually makes part, if you remember, of a larger silencing complex which includes the different proteins, but this is the functional one. And you remember also that AGO proteins are different isoforms in mammals. We have something like 8 different AGO proteins in our genomes. And these AGO proteins actually take up only one of the two strands of the RNA, okay? And the one that they take up is called the guide RNA, and the other one is called the passenger. So at this point, you have two choices, okay? On the left, on the right. On the left is whenever the pairing between the microRNA and the target RNA is extensive. That means that involves most of the nucleotides. In that case, this complex will bind AGO2, that is only one isoform of the 8 that we have. And this AGO2 is the only one which possesses endonuclease activity. That means slicing activity, okay? So the result of binding the AGO2 means that the RNA will be cut here. And of course, whenever you have a 3' prime that is not protected at poly A and a 5' prime that is not capped, you will destroy it immediately, okay? So in the other right side, you see that is the other solution. So whenever the pairing between the AGO and target, we will see how it is paired. But now it's not complete, so it's very limited, as you see in the picture. Okay, in this case you have translational inhibition, and also you have also the stabilization of the RNA. This is realized by two different distinct mechanisms. And we will discuss it briefly. Okay, so just to remember, this is the microRNA duplex, and only one of those two is actually the microRNA working in the system. Okay, so this is a spurious slide. Okay, it's okay. In different organisms. Actually, this is very diffused. We can find microRNA in plants, in very low metazoans, and so on. And they are many different kind of genes. They derive from different situations and so on and so on. So actually, the people uses to define what is called a canonical microRNA and distinguish it with the different variants of the quick. That we can find in different situations. So what they call a canonical pre-miRNA is actually, as you can see, something like 22 nucleotides that will be the future microRNA. And this is the loop. This is an unstructured loop, okay? And then you have something like 13 nucleotides here that are still double helix in some way. And this makes the drosha recognizing exactly this point. Okay. Then there are other motifs, sequence motifs, that actually are quite often found in all the microRNAs that we know. For example, you have this basal UG motif that is very frequently in many microRNAs, and also you see this kind of motif here, GHG, and also you have motif here like CNNC in this flanking part of the microRNA, and again you have a motif in the loop UGU that is quite frequent. It's not always, I mean, this is just a kind of average situation in which you have. Okay, what people tried to do was to make mutations in this motif, and whenever you mutate, for example, this one, you have a lower rate of process. So the drosha still do it, but with a lower efficiency. Okay, so it's kind of preference. So this is drosha, and this is the cut by dicer that will be done in the cytoplasm. So okay, looking at this different kind of microRNA that we observe, and this is metazoan, so all the animals, okay? Okay, we have different kinds. We have classical ones that are encoded by genes, dedicated genes, okay? And then we have miltrons, endogenous shRNA, and chimeric hairpins, and this that is particular, very particular in human as well, mouse and human. So let's see each of them. Okay, the principal one, we have seen it already, so don't discuss again. These microRNA are encoded in different parts of the genomes, okay? And many of those are actually derived from non-coding RNA transcript, but actually 40% of them are located within the introns of protein coding genes, okay? So they are encoded inside a transcript that actually makes another job, in the sense. Then, as a RNA polymerase 2, actually is involved in transcription of the majority. But we know a very small subset of microRNA that are encoded, that are transcribed by RNA pol 3. That is very, very thin, very, very few of them, really, very few. Okay, so this is the reason why I had this kind of slide that I showed you already. So you remember you have pure microRNA genes, like this one, okay, they may contain one or more microRNA in the same transcript, and they are called polycistronic, okay? Then you can have microRNA in some region, like, for example, this is the 3' UTR of a long non-coding RNA, or inside another non-coding RNA, like in introns, or in a protein-coding RNA in introns. Okay, so there are the different varieties of the transcript. So let me see the first one, the miltron. Miltron is particular because it doesn't require drosha to be processed, okay? So actually it is processed directly by the splicing apparatus. So when you have a miltron inside, please take a look of the colors, because the red one will mean the sequence that you will find in a mature microRNA, okay? And the blue section is the complementary section to the red one, okay? So you see this exon, this is a small intron, so the splicing will remove it as a lariat, okay? And then at this point there is a debranching activity, okay? There is a specific enzyme which debranches this point. So this will be resolved, and of course the blue part will pair with the red pair, okay? So you have a pair like this one. And this is a pre-miRNA hairpin. This doesn't require the drosha because this end is already done, is already okay? So it is transported directly in the cytoplasm. It will be cut by the dicer and so on. So, story goes. Okay? So, if, for example, you knock down dicer in a cell, you don't eliminate all the microRNA, but you still have the miltrons expressed. Okay, next. This is endogenous shRNA. SH stands for short hairpin RNAs. They are very rare, and they are derived from a gene in the lower part. This is a viral situation, just don't care. Okay. In the lower part you have a gene, and this gene is transcribed in a RNA which possess the structure already. You see, herpin and three prime end that is variable length. Okay. So this is special in comparison to the microRNA, canonical microRNA, because the canonical microRNA, if you remember, they have a 5' extension here, and they require drosh again. In this case, okay, this end, that which is defined by the transcription apparatus, because it's the first nucleotide transcribed, it is already the 5' end for the mRNA. Okay, so it is already done. Okay, and again, it doesn't need the drosha enzyme. It is just trimmed in the 3' to resolve it. Okay, by exonuclease, and so you get the pre-miRNA herpin that is directly processed by Dicer. So okay. So the story that you have to remember here is that in this case, since you have a cap here, this is transcribed, so you have a cap there, okay? You have the methyl guanosine on the other side. Okay, this cannot be used by Ago. And so in this case, Ago will always use the red part, so the 3' end of the micro. Okay, so going to the last part, I don't discuss these chimeric herpins here because they are very rare, especially in viruses, so it's a kind of particular story. But I discuss just this microRNA 451, that is the only one that is in human and mouse that we know exactly the function, the biological function, I mean, and that is processed in a very different way, that is that this primer 451, it does need the drosha enzyme, okay, so it is transcribed as a normal miRNA, okay, this one, then it is processed by the drosha enzyme, okay, but in this case, the pre-miRNA is so small that it doesn't require Dicer. Okay, so at this point, it is loaded directly on Ago protein, and it's the Ago protein that will cleave the passenger strand, okay, and will take the other one as a functional one. So it's the only known, okay? Okay. So the one that you saw before was not requiring drosha, but was requiring Dicer. This one is particular because it's not requiring Dicer, but it does require drosha. Okay, kind of vice versa. Okay, so this is the resume of all the story. It's actually figure one of the textbook. Okay, so now we have two questions that are quite important for our discussion, because actually we don't discuss the result of microRNA. This is cell biology, you will study probably in different courses, but we discuss the molecular stories, and the first is, how is the microRNA recognized by Ago protein? So how Ago distinguishes, okay, the different microRNAs, and second, how do microRNA direct target recognition? So how do they pair with the target RNA? Okay. Let's take first a look of some pairs. Okay, these are examples that are taken from the very first discovered microRNA messenger RNA pairs. So I'm talking about the early 2Ks, 2002-2003. So you see that this is the name of the microRNA here, LET7A. Okay, and this is the short microRNA, and this is one of its targets, HMGA2. Of course, this is much more extended than this one, because you don't see all the part on the left and the part on the right, okay, of the messenger RNA, but you see only the part that is concerned with the binding of the microRNA. And as you can see, you have complementarity here, and this is a kind of 8 nucleotide that pairs, then you lose more or less completely the pairing. Okay. So this is called the seed region. But this is not the 100% fashion in which the microRNA recognizes the target, because as you can see in the second line, there is again this less 7 microRNA, is the same, okay? And this is another physiological target, the transcription factor and F2 messenger RNA, which is there, okay? And as you can see, the target recognition is different. You have reduced pairing on the 5' end, okay? And then you have some intervals here, and then you have recognition again in the left part. So it changes a little bit. And these are two examples again. This is microRNA 24, in which you see that there is a pairing here, then this is not paired, so you have an unpaired base here. And then again you start the recognition, and then you lose. This is another case in which you have more extended recognition, and then a large part that is not recognized. And then again. So you have different fashions to different ways in which the microRNA is paired to the target. And this has been a very big, strong problem for the first 10 years of microRNA biology, because the people didn't understand exactly what was going on with the different kind of targeting. Now we have many, many different experiments, and especially with the, of course, with, yeah.
I'm sorry, what is the meaning of two dots between
G? Oh yeah, and I forgot. Yeah, this is because you probably know that in RNA, this is a pair that is a non-Watson-Crick pairing that you can have in RNA. You never heard about it?
No.
No? Really? Okay. So in RNA pair, you can have couples of G against U. And this is due to the U, of course. And this pair will take two hydrogen bonding. Okay. This is called a non-Watson-Crick bond. It's admitted only in RNA, not in DNA. Okay, sorry, I didn't mention before. I was saying we have now many, many data also from NGS, of course. So slowly, but finally, we have a more clear idea, and so making a resume of all the story, you see that the more or less the story is this one. So usually you have a seed region that can be as long as 8 nucleotides on the 5' end of the microRNA. Then you may have a variable bulge. That means a region in which you don't have any kind of complementarity in between, that can be long, like 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. And then you have a second complementarity region that is very often is quite corrupted, in the sense that you don't have a complete complementarity in the 3' end, okay? And that can be long as 4, 5 nucleotides, depending, or even 8 sometimes, okay? So it's a kind of story like this one. Okay. Of course, this also implies, but we will discuss it later, that due to the very low specificity of this interaction, each microRNA will recognize many targets. Okay, this is normal, it's logical. Okay. Okay, so go to the figure 2 of your textbook, and this story is again spelled out. So Bartel says, okay, we have canonical sites in which this is a messenger RNA, okay, and this is microRNA. So this is 5' of the microRNA, and of course this is 5' of the messenger RNA. So the seed match is usually limited to these nucleotides. Okay, not the first one. Okay, the first one we will see in a minute what it does. You can have a seed like only six nucleotides or seven nucleotides. Okay, and of course, when you have more extended seed, you have more effect. So here in this graph, in the upper part, Barthel reports a resume of all the studies that people did, okay, looking for what? Looking for the pairing length and the results in terms of messenger RNA downregulation, okay? And so as you can see, when you have this kind of pairing here, either five or six nucleotide pairing by without this A as a first nucleotide, you have a very low relative efficacy. So the microRNA apparently doesn't work, or work very, very little. When you have a heptamer, that means you have the six plus this A, okay, you increase the efficiency of downregulation of the messenger RNA, okay? And when you have eight, seven plus seven, or sometimes eight, okay, in this position, or seven plus an A as a first position, then you have very high effect, okay? So apparently the extent of the seed complementarity to the messenger RNA makes efficacy, okay? This is a kind of resume. This is what the canonical size, so-called canonical size. Then you have a second situation that is the atypical canonical site, in which, as you can see, you have a seed here that again is six nucleotide or seven, okay? And you may have A in this position that is good, very good for the microRNA targeting, okay? And then you have another supplementary pairing in this position, in the 3' end of the microRNA. And this makes strength, okay? So you may have additional strength of the microRNA. And finally, you may have a very imperfect seed. So you may have a very corrupted seed here, in which you have at least one base that is not bound. You remember probably the first example I showed you, in which there was not a pairing in that position, like this one, okay? But you have a compensatory pairing in the 3'. So in that case, again, the microRNA works with efficacy. Okay, so looking at the why, I mean, it's trying to explain why this kind of pairing are working. So actually, everything came quite clear when the people could crystallize the argonaut proteins together with the microRNA. So there are in the few last years, something like 5 years ago or something, we had some crystal structures appearing of this complex. And so the people realized that actually this is the agoprotein, a scheme of course. This is indicated helix alpha 7 that is very important for the pairing. And as you can see, there is first the explanation why usually the AGO prefers to have an A as a first nucleotide phosphorylated in 5', okay? And this is the reason why it prefers it, because the A is not pairing with the messenger RNA, okay? But it's actually inside a pocket in the protein. So apparently the protein will take up the microRNA by using this first interaction. Phosphoadenine in the first position in the site. Actually, it's not a completely 100% requirement, in the sense that sometimes microRNA have a U instead of an A as a phosphorylated first nucleotide, and apparently they work also quite well. Okay? But anyway, this is a protein-RNA interaction. Okay? Then you have a nucleation site. So in this case, you have this part of the microRNA that actually starts nucleating, okay, so starts hybridizing with the target. Okay? So a double helix is formed here, and somewhere here it is interrupted because this part of the RNA, the microRNA, is in contact, in tight contact with the helix A7 of the protein. So it cannot bind anymore to the microRNA, to the messenger RNA. Okay? This is blocking. At this point you have the second phase in which you can propagate the pyrene, if the complementary exists, of course, in the left part of the story. So you may have formation of this supplementary pairing here. Okay. Of course, think that this is a helix. Of course, RNA is a helix, so you have to turn it around. Of course, and this is one of the problems why the AGO protein actually has a requirement for a kind of helicase activity. Okay, a kind of helicase activity. Okay, and the final step is, of course, the final microRNA mRNA complex. And in this case, if you have AGO2, so the isoform which possesses the endonuclease activity, you will also have perfectly defined the position in which the messenger RNA will be cut here. Okay, this position is in between the 11th and the 12th nucleotide. Okay, so this is the reason why. And the next question is, how is post-transcriptional silencing performed? So what happens after that? And what happens has been also cleared quite recently. And this is the, again, a figure from your textbook, in which you see that this is messenger RNA, this is capped, this is the 4E, which replaces the cap binding protein. This is the coding sequence here with the ribosome attached to it. And this is the 3' UTR. Okay, you see that this is an AGO protein bound to the target site. And then you have poly A here. So what actually a series of studies with immunoprecipitation, of course mutants and so, actually made very clear is that AGO protein interact with this guy here, at least in human and in mammalians in general. It's called a TNRC6, and this protein in turn interact with the poly A binding protein complexes. Okay, exactly, it's bound to it. Okay, and interacts with an additional component which is called CCR4 knot complex. Okay. Okay, this protein here has a poly A tail reducing activity. Okay, so this protein will actually induce deadenylation of the messenger. Okay, and as you know, as you remember, when the deadenylation is under 10 nucleotides, you will have destruction of the RNA by exonucleases. Okay, this protein also interacts with another complex that is called DDX6-4ET, and this actually is an inhibitor of translation. You see this arrow that goes to the initiation complex here and inhibits translation, inhibits the initiation of translation by the ribosome. So you have a double effect. One is inhibition of translation that is prevalent in lower eukaryotes. Okay, when you look, for example, in Caenorhabditis elegans, you have mainly inhibition of translation as a result. Okay, when we go to human, or to mouse, to mammalians in general, you have both activities more or less equal depending on the context, on the type of cell type, whatever. So you have inhibition of translation and deadenylation of the messages. with destruction. But in mammalias, if you take a human cell or mouse cell in culture or even animal and so on, and you make experiments about it, you see that usually you have destruction of the messenger RNA. Okay. Good. So I told you already that slicing is only when you have maximal pairing between the microRNA and target RNA, and this is quite unusual for microRNA. There are only few of them that pair completely with the target, okay? So the slicing is usually is not the main reason for destroying the messenger RNA. This is the situation you see with siRNA. Okay, small interfering RNA that you find from the pathway of the RNA interference. Okay, so whenever you have complete pairing, like for example endogenous transcript, bisense transcription, or whatever else, okay, or infection by RNA, double-strand RNA viruses, or you transfect the cells with a double helix RNA to obtain silence of a gene, what we do every day in the lab today, siRNA, in that case, the response is slicing. Okay? Got the point? Good. Of course, the slicing is also quicker as an effect. Okay? As soon as you have the AGO loaded with the siRNA, you have destruction of the RNA, so the response is quite quick. Okay, when you have that other pathway, blocking of ribosome or the other story, you will see disappearing of the messenger RNA, but slower. Okay, it takes time. Good. So how many of those we have? This is a kind of very discussed point, because actually you can talk about predicted microRNA in the genome or verified microRNA. Verified means that you have experimental evidence that they exist, first, so they are expressed, they are present in the cells, and second, that they repress at least one target, okay? So this is the kind of validation that we need, of course. So when you look at the number of predicted microRNA, this is enormous. You go to GeneCode or to whatever, or to the Mirna database that I showed you before, and you will see thousands of microRNA genes predicted in the genome, just because they predict the possibility of a gene to make a hairpin, okay? This is the only way they predict it, okay? But when you try to validate, the number is actually much smaller. And as you can see in human, we have a number like 500 to 600, okay? And, okay, what about conservation? They are quite conserved. 90% of them are conserved in between human and mouse. And if you go down to vertebrates, many of those, like 60%, but you can find the exact number in the review, in your review, is conserved also down to the fish. So it's kind of conservation, of course, is also used to predict. Whenever you find in the genome something like appears to be a microRNA, if it is not conserved in other organs, you say, okay, this probably is not a microRNA, and discard. Okay, so the microRNA are divided in families. Families means that you have several microRNA in the genome that resembles them each other very, very much, and they have actually the same target sequence. Okay, so they have the same seed, the same target sequence, and they are called families. Okay. So they have same or similar target recognition. And this also makes an experimental point of view, because of course when you knock down, for example, experimentally the expression of one microRNA, often you don't see any phenotype. Just because you have many other microRNA that can substitute for that one, okay, as a function. So people, you will see a large discussion, a quite good discussion by David Bartel in the review about the effects. There are many tables also in the review showing for each microRNA knockdown or knockout what is the phenotype in mouse or in other organisms. And you will see that there are many of them that require actually co-KO. So you have to knock down several microRNA of the same family to get a phenotype. What actually we see in the microRNA that for each microRNA, or for each microRNA family as you want, okay, each of them recognizes actually hundreds of targets messenger RNA, and this makes another very big problems to understand in biology, okay. So how many messenger RNA are actually downregulated by one single microRNA? It's an important story. And what we see usually is that if you take all the target sets and you put in a GO, so in a gene ontology story, you usually the target set is enriched of specific GO terms. What I mean, say in other words, for example, you take some microRNA, okay, and you knock down them, and you get regulation of something like 500 genes or something. You make a GO, and you find that, for example, this set of genes is enriched, for example, for apoptosis or for cell growth or for cell movement. I mean, they are enriched on specific terms. This fact, of course, suggests that microRNA are regulator of physiological processes, are not random targeting whatever, but they are targeting specific sets of physiologically important genes. Okay, so what is the nomenclature? This is also important. I'm sorry, this is boring, but we have to understand a little bit the nomenclature of microRNA for. Especially when you will read some of the literature, so you will be able to understand what it means. Okay, so we have first, they are called after the species. Okay, so the first three letters are, in this case, Homo sapiens. Okay, and in the mouse, you will see MMU, that is mouse musculus. Musculus, MUM. Okay. And then mir, that means, of course, microRNA, and then you have numbers. That is just the order in which they were discovered, okay? There is few exceptions, as usual, we are humans, we are not computers, and so, of course, the first discovered RNA, for example, LET7 that you have seen before, they usually keep the older name, LET7. So they are not going in this kind of nomenclature. Anyway, so you have the name like this one, okay? I told you families, of course. If there are distinct precursors of genes expressing the same microRNA, so genes of the same family, in this case, you have a number, a digit after the number, okay? 1, 2, 3, and so on. Okay. And then, when you have, you can have mature miRNA with closely related sequences, but not exactly the same. Okay, so they are not families, but they are similar. So in that case, they call them as A, B, and so on. Okay. The third problem is which of the two possible strands of the pre-microRNA will be the guide. And which one will be the other one? So first of all, we have to remember that you have, if you have an A in the 5', you remember the structure before. So if you have an A or a U here in the first nucleotide of the strand, this will be preferred, of course. First criterion. Second criterion is the stability of the 5' half. Stability, of course, depends on the kind of nucleotide you have there. If you have C or G, they are more stable. If you have A and T, they are less stable. Okay, so the half part of the phi prime of the possible guide, if it has low stability, is better. Okay, so whenever you have enrichment of A, T in this part, you will have this guide selected. Okay, in some cases, can be produced two different microRNA from the same primine. Okay, so there are a few cases described in the literature in which both of the strands, this red one and this blue one, both of them will give rise to AGO functioning complex. Okay, in this case, you will distinguish the two microRNA in this way. If one is prevalent, look at this. For example, if you have this in this case of microRNA 56, if this is prevalent on the other one, you just put a star for the minor form. Okay? Okay, so when you have a star usually means passenger. Okay? This is the reason. If you have no data, that is a quite frequent event, or you know that there is no difference in between the two, okay, so both of them can be involved in AGO complexes with the same rate. In this case, you say 5P and 3P. Well, 5P and 3P, of course, refers to the position in the pre-microRNA. So this in the red is the 5P, and the blue is the 3P. Okay, so it's kind of complicated, but don't worry, you keep this slide with yourself when you read any paper about microRNA, and you will understand what they mean. Okay, if you don't want to take the slide with you, you have just to take this Mirbase address with you, and it will explain how the nomenclature works. Okay, good. So what time is it? Okay, we can go for an additional couple of slides and then we stop for a while. Okay, so what about the functions? What about the functions in general? I mean, biology. Okay, this is not the discussion that I want to do with you, otherwise we will probably need another couple of weeks to discuss all the functions of microRNA, that are so many. It's like a transcription factor story. You may have whatever. But I just copied and pasted some of the paragraph in the review, and they say, for example, many microRNAs are required for proper development, so they are involved in development. And among the studies that have been published, you see the development of the skeleton, teeth, brain, eyes, neurons, muscle, heart, lungs, blah blah blah. Everything, okay? So they have been involved in all the development steps, okay? Second paragraph, many microRNA influence cellular phenomena and functions, including exon sprouting, in neurons, of course, synapse formation function, mitotic spindle orientation, polyploidization, cytogenesis, and blah, blah, blah. And many other functions at the cellular level. So again, many microRNA influence physiological processes, including cardiac conduction, blood pressure, lipid or cholesterol metabolism, insulin production, pituitary function, and blah blah blah. So everything. Okay, and finally, many microRNA knockout strain, and this is important because you can knock out, of course, in the mouse any kind of microRNA gene, and then I told you there are three tables in the review. You will see all the effects that have been studied to date. Have different responses, okay, to models of neuronal, cardiac, muscular, pulmonary, vascular, and blah blah blah. And they may have altered susceptibility to fungal or bacterial infection, or altered propensity to develop tumors in cancer models. Okay, so many, many different stories. Okay? And finally, this, especially this finding, is associated to the fact that, of course, people started, and if you look in the literature, we find hundreds of articles reporting the fact that in human cancer, for example, there is altered profile of microRNA expression. Okay? There are many, many, many reports of altered profiles in cancer. Of course, probably there are altered profiles also in other disease. The problem is that cancer, as you know, the cancer is usually removed surgically from the patient, so you can study what happens inside the tumor. When you have, for example, a dementia or something, it's difficult to go to remove the brain from the person, because it's much more difficult to study. Okay, you can study in the models, of course, in the animals, but it's not the same, exactly the same. Anyway, in the models that the people use, there are always altered expression profile in disease. That's the message for you. Okay. So, what about the studies about microRNA? So, there are again hundreds of studies about expression of microRNA in different situations, and what we know is that microRNA are expressed in each cell in hundreds. So you usually find at least 100 different microRNA expressed in a cell. Okay, they are usually very strongly tissue and cell specific, in the sense that some microRNA are expressed only in a specific cell type or tissues and so on. They are very often developmentally and signal transduction regulated, means that again their expression can be specific to a developmental stage and in response to any kind of for example hormonal stimulation or whatever. In our lab, several years ago, we studied the response to estrogen, for example. There are many microRNA that actually change expression in response to estrogen. This I told you already in pathology, okay? And, okay, the last line is also important, because the microRNA, especially since they are in complex with the AGO, okay, they are very stable in the protein, and so they are released by dying cells, okay, or they are released from the cell in nanovesicles or microvesicles, okay. So you can find them in the circulating blood, and this is thought to be very important today as a diagnostic mean, okay? So there are many studies you will probably discuss in pathology in other courses, in which people try to make assays in blood to derive any kind of pathology developing in some organs. For example, medical neurologists use it a lot in this moment for dementia, for other kind of pathologies, in which there is specific expression of a microRNA that should not be expressed normally, and you find in the blood, so you say, okay, it's a sign of the disease. Okay, we can probably stop for a few minutes, and then we see some experimental data that are interesting. Okay, so taking again to the experimental. So what I told you that actually you have this kind of long tables in the review, in which they explain, David Barter explains the results from the biological point of view of knocking out or knocking in microRNA, and actually there are many, many papers that use suppression of microRNA. Of course you can make a knockout you use genetic techniques and you make a knockout mouse or whatever, but if you work with any other kind of cells, for example human cells, you don't do that. You can do it with the CRISPR technology, of course, but we don't have yet that many results about it. Okay, so the common technique is suppression by antisense technologies. So for example, you use oligos that have a complementary sequence to the microRNA, okay? And they are chemically modified in order to make them non-hydrolyzable, so they are stable in cells. You can buy them. I mean, there are many biotechnological companies that sell anti-mir, they call anti-mir. Okay, other, in the other sense, you can overexpress a microRNA in a cell, and again, you can use two kind of approaches. One is to use mimics, that is synthetic double helix RNA that you can transfect on the cells and then look for the effect, okay? Or you can integrate a mini gene in the cell. A mini gene means a plasmid, or a virus, whatever, containing a mini gene which expresses the prime mRNA, so the complete sequence of the prime mRNA that is processed normally as it was endogenous. Okay. on the other side, you have to make expression analysis, and expression analysis, of course, is quite difficult because they are so short. You can imagine to make a PCR of a RNA that is so short is not easy to do, because usually the primers that you use for PCR are as long as the microRNA, so it's complicated. So there are actually specific protocols for short RNA. Actually they use oligos that are made of very special nucleotides. They are called LNA, stands for locked nucleic acids, and they are especially chemically modified in order to increase the hybridization strength, because to prime so small RNA, microRNA, you have to use very short complementary sequences. Kind of difficult. Anyway, protocols exist for making RT-PCR analysis of microRNA, okay? And also specific protocols and application exist for making NGS, of course, for making RNA-seq out of the cells, okay? So especially Illumina sells a special kit for short RNA that, of course, include also this microRNA, okay? So if anybody of you wants to contribute to the wiki methodology for short RNA, I think that there was already something on the short RNA sequencing. Okay, so the experimental approaches for microRNA are several ones, and they are resumed in this slide, and I cut the parts of the slide to explain. The first is to make expression profiling after microRNA knockdown or overexpression. So the idea is that if I want to study what are the targets of any specific microRNA and what is the physiological effect of microRNA, I can of course use, for example, microRNA mimics or microRNA inhibitors. So knocking in or knocking down the expression of this microRNA, and then make differential expression by either microarrays or proteomics or, of course, RNA-seq. Okay? And this has been used for many, many studies, also by Barthel himself. We'll see a result in a minute. The other very important approach is to try to isolate the microRNA mRNA target together. Okay? So you imagine to have a cell in which you want to know the effect, the targets of a microRNA. So you can transfect the cell with a specific microRNA expressing vector, okay? And then you use an antibody that is the green one, of course. I don't see the light, okay. antibody against the AGO protein. Okay, so this antibody will recognize the AGO protein and of course will also recognize the microRNA mRNA complex. Okay, then you immunoprecipitate. Okay, and then you eliminate all the RNA on the left, on the right of the complex, and then sequence, or sequence or microarray, whatever. And so you will identify the targets. Okay. And the last approach that has been extremely used for that is the bioinformatics approach, in the sense that people try to identify or to predict, okay, the targets from any microRNA by using different algorithms which were taking account different stories, the complementary, of course, the complementarity, of course, but also the mRNA context. For example, we know that most of the natural targets of microRNA are located in 3' UTR. So if you predict a sequence located in the UTR, will weigh more than predicting in the other position of the RNA, for example. Then second, to look for the secondary structure in target RNA, of course. If the RNA has secondary structure, it probably will be much more difficult to attach by the microRNA, of course. Okay, so they make kind of secondary prediction. And then the final story that they look is for evolutionary conservation of targets. Okay, so all the prediction algorithms use all together. But why I told you about this bioinformatics prediction? Because in the databases, and you will see them, okay, there are two kinds of target prediction. One derives from pure bioinformatics, and the other one derives from the immunoprecipitation experiments. So they are completely different. Many times they actually overlap, okay? Hopefully. Okay, they hopefully overlap, but they are made with a different story. So please take care whenever you have a target prediction, if it is done by informatics or by this kind of physical immunoprecipitation. The most recent version, actually, they report both of them. Okay, so you can see both of the predictions. Good, let me just see some of the papers. I want just to show you some of the papers, fundamental, let's say, so you can have a kind of paradigm of the stories that the people did. And this is a paper 10 years ago, was published 10 years ago by David Barton, you see? So, okay. And what they did was to was to actually ask for this kind of targets, okay? And especially they were interested in looking for the you remember, for the story of the seeds. So the sequence that actually nucleates the interaction between microRNA and messenger RNA. So what they did, they transfected the cells with some microRNA, okay? So they overexpressed in cells microRNA, and they used 11 different synthetic double-stranded microRNAs, okay? And then after that, they looked for regulation, okay? So they took RNA of the cells after a while and looked for, at that time they didn't have the RNA-seq technology available, so they used microarrays, okay? And at this point, they looked at the 3' list of all the genes regulated, okay? And look at with bioinformatics to see the sequence identified or not. Okay, so what they realized was exactly what you saw in the slide before. So they looked for you see 6 MR seed matches or 7 to 8 MR sites like this one, starting from position 2 or starting from position 1 or starting in this way with the A, okay? So they divided all the targets in these 4 classes, okay, what they found, and they looked for the effect. And so what they found was that whenever you have, okay, this is fold changes, I have to explain you what you see in the picture first. Okay, so this is the what you see. Okay, in the left, this is a fraction per bean. That means how many messenger RNA are have this kind of situation. Okay, and what is the effect as a fold change? Okay, fold change as related to the control, of course. So whenever you see something that is lower than zero, means that you have a repressive effect. Okay. So if you make a different calculation, you can express the same results in cumulative results. Okay. So you sum all these points and you make cumulative curves. Okay. So this is the cumulative fraction that you see. And as you can see, whenever you have no sight, this is the black line that is completely, perfectly centered on zero, of course, because no sight, no effect. Okay. When you have only 1/6 mer sight, so is the most unfavorable situation, only 6 complementary nucleotides, you have a very small effect. You see this violet or pink line that you see here. On the contrary, when you have a complete site, this is a complete 8-mer site, so the most favorable situation, you see the blue line here, you have a very large reduction in the messenger RNA level. Okay, so this was the first discovery. Actually, it was reported after, but this is that just to show you how the experiment was made. Okay, so transfection of a Mirna mimic, wait for some time, then extract RNA and make expression studies for target recognition. Okay, so this was the first study, and after a while, you can see this in 2009. So this is another guy that you know already, Robert Darnell. You probably remember the paper that we showed last time on messenger RNA stability. It was the same laboratory. And at this point they were interested, of course, in making direct identification of targets. Okay, so by using immunoprecipitation of the AGO protein complex, AGO RNA complex. And they used this S-CLIP. S stands for high throughput sequencing, and CLIP stands for cross-linked immunoprecipitation. Okay, and so they used this one. This is the first paper reporting analysis of this one, and this was, they realized the map of MIR miRNA 124, that is the most abundant microRNA expressed in brain. So what they did was to took brains of mouse, okay, and looking for this kind of interaction. So they used immunoprecipitation, anti-AGO. Okay, this is the immunoprecipitation that you see here. This is the AGO protein. Okay, and if you label the RNA, okay, so they made the labeling of the RNA once extracted, and you see that there are 3 bands in the gel. 90 corresponds to the void AGO, so the AGO protein without any RNA inside. Okay. 110 kilodalton means the AGO with the microRNA inside. And then 130 means the AGO protein plus the microRNA inside, plus the target messenger RNA inside. Okay. In the structure that you see here in the right bottom corner, you see that there is a picture of the, this is not the authors that made, it's me that passed the figure inside. This is a crystal structure of the AGO protein that you see here in gray. In red, you see the microRNA structure, 3', 5', okay? And this is the messenger RNA left over after trimming, okay? Of course, the messenger RNA is very long, but then you trim it, and when you trim it, you reach more or less this level and this level. So this is the complex, functioning complex. Okay, so they actually separated this fraction here, okay, the bands, okay, they separated the bands this one and this one, and they put in jail, they separated the bands and then cut the band and go into NGS. You cannot sequence long RNA and short RNA together. Do you know that? Okay? So you have to make separate sequencing. So they cut actually the small band here, microRNA, go to the short NGS, and they cut the other band here with the messenger RNA part and go to NGS sequencing on the other side. So you have two stories. They made the experiments in triplicate, so they took three brains from mouse, and this is just a correspondence. The blue line means that you have the red line means that you have a very good correlation coefficient in between the three replicates of those. And then when they found all these targets, they tried to understand with bioinformatics where the targets were placed, okay? So they isolated only the miRNA-124, that is the most frequently expressed, and looked for targets in the immunoprecipitated RNA for that particular RNA, and they mapped in the biotypes, okay? So what they found is depicted in this graph here. Almost one third of the targets were in 3' UTR. Okay, and this was known already. This was known. Okay. 25% of the targets actually were in the CDS, so in the coding sequence. So this was not that completely expected at that time. Okay, so the people didn't imagine that many targets were actually in the coding sequence. Okay. This 3' extension means, you remember the alternative splicing, sometimes you have different length of the UTR. So looking only at the 3' UTR extension, you have 8% of the size mapping there. Okay. Then they found 5% mapping to non-coding RNAs and introns and intergenic. Please note that this paper was in 2009. So was it preceding or following the ENCODE results? You remember when the ENCODE results were published? I do. In 2012. Okay, so this full description of all non-coding RNA, as you remember, was made only by the ENCODE project. So many of those sites that these authors described as intergenic others or introns or whatever probably are targets on the long coding RNAs, okay? That time were unknown. Good. So this is a map of the microRNA targets. These are microRNA targets here, as you see. Okay, that are mapped on a kind of graph reporting the position in the messenger RNA. So this is poly-A position. This is the center of UTR. Okay, can you follow me? And this is stop codon. So here, stop codon, and then you have the UTR here. Okay, can you follow? Good. And then here is inside, this is KB, inside the coding sequence, okay? And so if you see the mapping of the microRNA, you see that 63% stand in 3' UTR, okay? And they are not evenly distributed, as you can see. They are mostly in the position close to the stop codon, or close to the poly-A tail. And then the frequency go down in the center, okay? So following this paper, actually the people started to try to make kind of experiment in which a target site was displaced. For example, a target site that was in the left side or in the right side, they put them in the center, and actually they verify that this is true. So whenever a target site is in the center of the UTR is very inefficient. Whenever you find a target site in the close to the stop codon or close to the poly A, is very efficient. Okay, now there is one problem in these experiments. I don't know if you picked up the problem. The problem is that you have at least, I told you, you have to sequence separately the messenger RNA and the mRNA have to be sequenced separately. So try to understand what you find experimentally. You have a list, a long list of targets and a long list of microRNA, okay? Then you have to put them together. You have no evidence that one is coupled to the other one. You have to go through the sequence again with bioinformatics and using the algorithm of the seeding, remember the seeding sequence, try to match them, okay? But this again is a prediction procedure, it's not a physical coupling, okay? So in the laboratory of Darnell, they developed a novel. Don't see the park clip, it's too long. Skip it. Okay. They developed a technology to link the microRNA to its target in a covalent way. Okay? So what they did was to make again algo its clip, so the technology is the same as before, okay, more or less. But, okay, this is the cell. They use it again, brains, because this lab uses brains. They weren't interested in that, okay? So they make tissue lysis, DNA treatment to remove the DNA, okay? Then they made RNA treatment for removing double-stranded RNA, and then they made ego IP, okay? Ah, sorry, this cross-link, of course, by UV irradiation, okay? So the ago IP, okay, and then washes, and then finally they have purified ago ternary complex in which you have the ago protein, the microRNA, and the target leftover. Remember that you always have RNA treatment, so this RNA is short, okay? At this point, they developed a technology to ligate the ends of the messenger RNA with the ago, okay? So they made a phosphorylation step here, okay? In order to make all the phosphorylation possible. And then they used T4, the bacteriophage T4 RNA ligase, okay? So this ligase will join this 5' prime end of the messenger RNA with this OH prime end of the microRNA, making a continuous RNA, okay? So in this case, after removal of the protein, you have the microRNA is directly linked to its target. This, of course, enormously helps the identification of the target site, okay? So after that, you go directly to the sequencing, okay? And they found, of course, a very good, I don't have the table, of course, but just to say that this is the technology that showing the highest resolution in defining the microRNA to messenger RNA couples, okay? Good. So we go to the last part now, in which we will discuss the regulation of microRNA. Okay, that is also an important story. First, how the microRNA are transcribed. Okay, and what the people found that they are, as I told you, they are transcribed by the RNA polymerase II. And actually, when looking at the many different microRNA promoters, you see that actually they are exactly the same as protein coding genes. Okay, so the promoters of microRNA genes are the same as protein coding genes. So they contain the same factors, the same polymerase, the same enhancers. I mean, they are mostly like the same. Also remember that many of these microRNA are embedded in other genes. So of course, in that case, co-regulation is, of course, the story. Okay. So you have the same kind of regulation, and immediately you can think about a circuit of regulation. So you may have a protein coding gene here, and a microRNA gene here. Okay. With regulatory sequences around, okay? And so you will have expression of the protein coding gene. This is a messenger RNA, and expression of the microRNA gene. And then this microRNA gene will regulate, down-regulate expression, okay? So if the transcription of the microRNA and protein coding gene are under the same control, this makes a circuit. We will discuss it a little later, this part. Okay, there are a lot of regulation also on the enzymes of the pathway. Okay, so people started to study also the regulation of DROSHA, DICER, exporting, and blah, blah, blah. And almost all of them are under regulation of some pathway in the cells. But the problem is that the majority of regulatory pathways are actually shared by protein coding. So it's kind of the same story. This is a note also. People found that also some microRNA get edited. You remember the A2I RNA editing mechanism. And so sometimes they change specificity also for that. Okay, so regulatory circuits. What it means with regulatory circuits? For example, CD. This is the beta myosin heavy chain gene, MSG. Okay, and this is the alpha myosin heavy chain gene. There are two different. And people found that actually in an intron of this beta and alpha, in the intron, there is a mirtron. This mirtron encodes for microRNA 208B and 28A. Sorry for the slide. There is an A here. Okay. So the interesting fact is that this microRNA, okay, they are, as you can probably remember, B and A stands for microRNA that are very similar target sequence. Okay. So this microRNA will inhibit the expression of many targets, of course. But in among those targets, there is also a transcription factor that is called TARP1. This transcription factor, TARP1, is essential for the transcription of the myosin heavy chain genes. Okay, so you see immediately the circuit, as you can see. Which kind of result has this kind of circuit in your mind? Please, make a reasoning.
It increases expression of the beta chain.
Yeah, of course. So you have expression of this microRNA. This will reduce expression of this TARP. So inhibition of beta is completely off, okay? So this is an autoregulatory circuit that in the cardiac muscle keeps the expression of this beta gene very high, okay? This is a kind of self-maintaining circuit, okay? Then we have another kind of story that is developmental. It's also very, very nice. That is in the stage of development in which you still don't have the definition about neurons and non-neurons. Okay, so when the always call it epiblast, right? In which you have definition of these neuron non-neural cells. You have, as you can see, you have expression of two objects, One is this REST SCP1 complex, and the other one is microRNA 124. It's the same that we saw before with the experiments of Martin. So the expression of microRNA 124 is negatively regulated by the binding of the Ray silency transcription factor to the promoter in non-neuronal cells. Okay, so when you have REST and SCP1 expressed, you have inhibition of the production of Mirna 124. Okay, and interestingly, miRNA 124 inhibits the production of SCP1, so of the complex. So this is an auto-inhibitory circuit, okay, that is regulated only on the basis of the stochastic level of expression of one or the other. So in some cells, you have this complex prevailing, okay? So after a few circuits, of course, the expression of microRNA goes down, and you will have no neuronal cells. Okay, and in some cells, on the contrary, you have prevailing miRNA 124 level. So after a short time, the REST SCP1 complex is completely down, and you will have development in the neuronal sense. Okay, so again, a circuit of a microRNA and the transcription factor that actually self-regulate each other and will determine the fate of a cell. We have many. We have a description of many, many circuits like this one, always involving a microRNA and a transcription factor. Okay? So these are just examples, cellular proliferation, myogenesis, or many other examples. Okay? Always you have a transcription factor, a microRNA couple. Transcription factor, microRNA couple. And actually, this is a theory of the circuit in which you have a transcription factor that actually can regulate both a target and a microRNA. Okay? This has been suggested mainly by the fact that the messenger RNA that encode for transcription factor are very often controlled by microRNA. Okay, so this is a kind of very common situation. But I make you thinking about this kind of circuit. So this is a transcription factor that regulates a protein encoding gene here, okay, and a microRNA gene here. And the microRNA genes actually works inhibiting, in this case, the joint target. But we can have two kinds of situations. Let me show you. One is uncoherent circuit, okay. Left top. This transcription factor upregulates. This arrow means upregulates, so sustains the expression of a messenger RNA, okay, and in the same time of a microRNA. And this microRNA actually inhibits the expression of the protein. So they are opposite effects, okay? This increases and this decreases. So they are called incoherent circuits. On the other side, you can have a coherent circuit in which, for example, this transcription factor here increases the expression of the messenger RNA, okay? And at the same time inhibits transcription of the microRNA. Inhibition of microRNA means increasing again the messenger RNA level, okay? Do you agree with me? Inhibition of micro, inhibition means activation of the joint target, okay? So it's coherent. Now, can you try to suggest me what can be the function of these two kinds of circuits in biology? What is the result in terms of try to guess. I know this is a more or less 50-50 in the sense that in the experimental system we have seen half of the situation in which you have coherent circuits and half of the cases in which you have incoherent systems. Okay, so they should mean something in the in terms of cell physiology, of course.
Maybe the regulation is not about TF but about the
VM. Yeah, of course, but I mean which kind of response can be mediated by a coherent or incoherent circuit in your mind. Imagine to imagine not be fixed on the graph. Imagine activation of this TF, okay? Okay, you have a cell, you have a input, whatever. Let's make the commonest in my mind is estrogen. Estrogen we activate the transcription factor. Transcription factor binds to several genes and activate transcription, okay, or inhibit transcription, okay. So, what is the meaning of having an incoherent or coherent circuit? What is the, in the term of results? So, the level of the target. What happens to the protein?
The first one is about a negative feedback, and the second one is positive.
Yeah. So, this one is a negative feedback. This is a positive feedback. But what can be the meaning in physiological terms of having a negative feedback? Yes, but you if you have a take in account that you continue to produce, okay, because you have activation of the TF, and the other side you have continued downregulation. So you have a upregulation and downregulation contempt in the at the same way. What is the result of up and down?
Equilibrium,
homeostasis. So every time you see a circuit like this one, you have what is called a homeostatic response. Okay, what is the meaning? It's the meaning that the gene can have a response element for a transcription factor, but in a specific physiological situation, they shouldn't increase the production of that gene. Okay, they have to keep stationary. Okay, so this is a homeostatic circuit. Now let's look at the other one. What it means? What is the response in the other? In the other circuit. This one.
Increased production of the main target.
Increased enormously, speeding up the response. So this is called the pulse response or the quick response. So many genes, sometimes for a particular signaling, you have to increase very quick, very rapid, and very high response, okay? So you activate a coherent circuit. The microRNA inhibition will increase synthesis of the protein of the messenger RNA that is already there, and at the same time the transcription factor will increase production of the messenger RNA, so you have a quick peak of the response. Okay? So they have actually a biological significance and they are very important. Actually, this kind of incoherent circuits have attracted attention because, as you know, the homeostasis problem in the cell is a problem because the cells always face the fact of having having the correct level of erythropoietin expressed. So this is a very important point. And curiously, but not unexpectedly, this circuit here, incoherent circuit, is seen many times in housekeepers. So whenever you have a housekeeper situation in which you should express a protein at the same level, more or less, and you see this kind of thing. Okay, that is a kind of balancing everything. Okay, and this, on the other side, if you look at the joint targets that are regulated by coherent circuits, usually they are response genes, okay? So genes responding to signals or something like this. Transcription factors and other stories and this one. Good. So, just to show you that we also made some publication about this. This is, a paper that we published several years ago, and actually we set up a database on all these circuits. Very interesting. These are people from the Daniela Taverna works in the MBC here in Vianitza. And this is actually a physicist working on there. Olivier Friard, probably you know, because working in the Department of Biology. Anyway, it's kind of bioinformatics. I don't know anything about it. I was just there because it was paying. Not for us. Okay. So, last story. We still have 5 minutes, no more than that. And actually, it's a pity because probably you saw that in the ENCODE experiments there are many, many long non-coding RNAs. So, we actually don't discuss function of long non-coding RNAs because we don't have time. Actually, this is the main reason for that. But just look at one possible story about long non-coding RNAs, because it is very discussed in these years, and so it's probably better just to know. Okay. So, of course, the microRNA can target protein coding genes, but they can also target different RNA. Okay. They can all target, for example, long non-coding RNAs. Okay. And if you look at the gene code version, you see that the long non-coding RNAs are many, many, many. There are something like 16,000 long non-coding RNA genes in our genome. And there are something like 28,000 transcripts of long non-coding RNA. So, of course, there is a big interest today to understand what they do in cells. Okay, there are many, many possible functions, and sometimes some publication appears, some paper appears in the literature reporting for different functions. And one of the probably most discussed stories concerns the fact that sometimes long non-coding RNA have many microRNA target sites. Okay, so the question is why they are not translated. So why they do have a microRNA target? And so this is a work that appeared a few years ago from an Italian scientist. This is Irene Bozzoni, working in Rome, and they actually found that during the myocyte and myotubes development, there is an expression of a specific microRNA, you see here, there is a wave here at the stage of myoblast, more or less, of these two guys here, 206 and 231, okay? And then they go down, and then when you have final differentiation, you express microRNA 133, microRNA 1, okay, and in between, when this microRNA fall down, you get expression of a long non-coding RNA that is called link MD1. So when they look at for this, okay, so this is just the effect of this microRNA. Okay. When you look at the sequence of the link MD1, they found that in the sequence of this RNA, there are many sites that are specific for microRNA 135 and for microRNA 133. Okay? So they actually developed a theory in which the long non-coding RNA, that is this one over there, can work as a sponge for microRNA. Okay, so it will bind the microRNA, and of course, since the amount of microRNA in the cell is limited, if it interacts with this guy, cannot interact with pure protein coding genes. So actually relieving inhibition from the microRNA. This is called the sponge theory, and they can be has been verified in a few cases for long non-coding RNAs, for circular RNA, remember this kind of strange circular products of splicing, for pseudogenes, of course, when they are transcribed, and of course for protein coding. So this is There are two or three publications, and one is from Irene Bozzoni group. This one is probably a very validated and verified story. And coming back to the biology means that whenever you have expression of this link, actually the mRNA are subtracted from the system. Okay, so you get a response in terms of the proteins that are regulated by them. Okay. But then there was a publication by another scientist of Italian origin, that is Pierpaolo Pandolfi, who published something about an oncogene that was downregulated by a circuit like this one, by a long non-coding RNA. And then there are many other papers that are not that solid. Actually, if you read if you go today to the review by Bartel, when you will study the review for preparing the exam, you will see that Bartel actually strongly opposes this theory. Bartel is completely, whenever we met him in the congresses, he's very fighting against this theory, because he makes a kind of point. He says, okay, if you consider each microRNA, it has hundreds of targets in the cells, okay? So actually the amount of microRNA in a cell is always extremely limiting. It's never saturating all the possible targets, okay? So at this point it's quite impossible that only the expression of one single target can modify the targets of the other ones, unless you increase by several order of magnitude. Okay, so it is very critical on this kind of problem. But anyway, I think that the papers that you showed before are probably correct. I mean, the paper that you saw from Irene Bozzoni lab was probably very good. But just if you see in the literature this kind of hypothesis, is called SeRNA, competing endogenous RNA hypothesis. Take it with care. It's not completely verified. Many scientists are opposing them, and so just take care. Okay, so this is the conclusion, and we will meet tomorrow.